Star and Shadow Radio. Star and Shadow Radio. Ah, it's time. I hope I can be heard. Erin already says, oi oi. It's dead funny seeing you all there already, like waiting for the show. So yeah, this is We Can't Promise Anything advice with Marion and me, Gilly. And as usual, we recorded this in advance. Marion decided that we needed a break halfway through because it was too stressful sort of being on all the time. So I've had to set it up differently and I'm not entirely sure it's going to work. I'll try and stay on top of it. But I thought also, so every fortnight, so this is the third show of our very amateur Agony Aunt show, Marion sends me a WhatsApp message at about 25 past 10. So today it says, you have to imagine it in Marion's voice. If you don't know Marion's voice, it's coming. So you can imagine afterwards. Says, eee, Gilly, it's that time again. Hope you're not feeling sick. Defo not quite as sick. I'm going to listen, of course. Also have Chum coming round. We'll get a prob off her. Eee, you're marvellous for doing this, though. Kiss, 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 kiss. It just entertains me because Marion is such a sort of marvellous character, as you'll hear. Shall we crack on? Oh, we start off by listening to Draft Jingles by Jack Burton because he sent us five and we haven't picked one yet. So we start off by doing that, which will hopefully make sense. Here goes. What do you think of that one, Marion?
Well, that's jingle number three. Yeah. I thought it was, I quite liked it. I thought it was quite complex, a little bit loud, a little bit quiet, a bit like my
funky volume. A bit funky.
Yeah, a bit like
I mean,
this.
I was dancing, you weren't dancing quite as much.
No, I wasn't. You're quite right. But
I do that mostly for your entertainment.
Yes, and can you see I try and pretend very hard not to be entertained?
So that jingle was the third jingle by Jack Burton. At some point we'll have to make a selection, you know, Marion, if we carry on like this.
Yes, or, you know, one week we might do a problem, do a jingle, do a problem, do a jingle.
Oh.
Like a little jingle fest.
I mean, we could actually play some music.
Well, we could, but I think we won't. We've got enough jingles to keep us going for a wee while.
We'll have to write lyrics for the jingle, or someone could write some lyrics for us.
That would be a lovely little project for someone to do.
I feel my creativity is exhausted just by doing this much.
Oh, mine too. In fact, I don't think I've got enough creativity to quite keep up sometimes.
Well, let's see if we can get it to the end of the five problems. We've got five right problems today. But we will have a little break in the middle, eh?
I think that would be very fabulous.
Okay. Shall we crack on, do you think?
Yes,
We've already talked about our problems at length this morning, so...
Yes, we have. And a pre-recording chit-chat gossip catch-up, which... As we are the experts of diversion, could have gone on for much longer.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would like to eat at some point today and I would like to go to bed at some point tonight.
Yes.
Yeah.
After the sleepy time show, which leads us on beautifully to the first problem.
Which is from Sophie.
Yeah, and Sophie hosts the sleepy time show. So we're recording this on a Sunday, even though it'll be broadcast on a Wednesday. And on Sunday night, Sophie hosts the Sleepy Time Show on Star and Shadow Radio.
Well, Much to my shame, I haven't listened to the Sleepy Time show, but I am going to listen to it tonight.
Exciting. Right. Yeah. Do you want to read out Sophie's problem?
Yes, please. Right. Right. Great show. I'm loving it so much. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I put an extra emphasis on that because I love it so much. Thank you, Sophie. I have a problem. Basically, I have a rescue dog from the Balkans. She's called Wilma, and she's very sweet and affectionate with me. With everyone else, she tries to bite them, shouts at them, and runs after them to fight. She was found on the streets, so it's her way of survival. It's scary for passers-by because she looks so cute. While this is something I'm working on, it's got worse over lockdown, as I can't socialise her as much and go to a behaviourist, etc. My question is, will I be single forever because of my Raji dog? Should I give up on my love life and just commit myself to Wilma?
I love this problem.
Me too. I can think of worse commitment opportunities, can't you?
Oh, I've made those commitments in the past and then had to renege on them.
Absolutely.
Wilma is very cute. Sophie sent us some pictures. Wilma is...
Oh, yes. Wilma is gorgeous. And also has a...
I just think... I don't know why you would need a partner when you've got Wilma. I mean, I do. It's a different thing. I mean, I think it's funny because the problem sort of took a turn. I thought it was going to be like, how can I help Wilma? But it was like, will I be single forever?
And then we took a huge swing off piste to Sophie's love life.
Well, Sophie, I think if you can't find someone who accepts your Raji dog, then they're not the person for you.
Yeah. But also, I know what it's like to have a Raji dog, because we used to have a Raji dog. And our Raji dog was called Orphan Annie when she was in the cat and dog shelter. But she dropped the orphan when she came to us, and she just turned into Annie. But she had been abused as well, and she had the same sort of syndrome where she'd look lovely and uber cute, but then when she'd get alongside another person or another dog, she'd turn into like a rabid a beast and would be terrible. She was aggressively slightly out of control, but she kept it hidden really well.
I think a ragginess is part of the charm of many dogs. Like, I once dated someone for a while, and I liked him loads, but I really liked his Raji dog the most.
Did you? Did you like the Raji dog best of all?
I love her. She's great. I mean, it is hard because I used to sometimes look after that Raji dog, and her name is Princess Coconuts, also known as Coco. And Coco is very Raji, and I once saw her almost murder a Jack Russell, and it was horrible. But I'd feel sorry for her because we'd go on the beach, and because she was such a Raji, you couldn't let her off the lead. And she clearly like had those normal drives and wanted to run about and play and all of that stuff. But if you let her off the lead, she might try and murder a dog.
Yeah, so you couldn't.
So you couldn't do that, and it was difficult being the sort of companion of a Raji dog, even just for 24 hours or so.
Yeah,
but you know, Sophie.
Me too, and coming back to Sophie's problem, it's our Raji dog, our little Annie, had been abused and she'd been injured and all sorts of things. And when we got her, she was like so. She like slunk along the wall. She was like a wall hugger when you took her out for a walk. So not only did she have this hidden aggression, she also like behaved really strangely. And I take Sophie's point about socialization, about I've got two sons and all their friends used to come round and play with her. And then they introduced Annie to their dogs. And it was like a huge socialization exercise that went on for quite a long time. And I think over time, Annie overcame a lot of her fears, because her fear and her aggression was, as Sophie says, based on abandonment and ill treatment originally. And I think as Wilma learns, hopefully, as Wilma learns, that not everybody's going to abuse her, she might like relax a little bit, but maybe never totally. So hopefully, for Sophie, she might get the best of both worlds at the end of the day.
There are other people, as well as me, who are fond of Raji dogs.
Yeah.
I think maybe, you know, that's a thing that you would have to look for. Because I don't think you can now uncommit to Wilma because she is so gorgeous. And I don't think that's what you're suggesting, Sophie. But I do think that maybe it's, you know, you see you and Wilma as a package, and whomever you date, you'll have to explain that Wilma is part of your life, and they'll have to get over the idea of a Raji dog. And there'll be someone who doesn't just want to get over the idea of a Raji dog, but is like, mint, a Raji dog. Belter, can't wait to meet a Raji dog.
Absolutely.
If anyone's out there and has a Raji dog, I'm up for meeting all the Raji dogs. Maybe yes. I should put that on my dating profile.
It's a lovely phrase, isn't it, Raji dog?
I think I might encounter some of the wrong sorts if I put that on my dating profile.
Yeah, I think you might indeed.
Not that you but can meet anyone right now anyway.
If anybody's out there's got any tips for Sophie and her Raji dog of how she can sort of calm Wilma down or make her feel more secure, then we would love to hear.
Yeah. You can email wecan'tpromiseanything@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the meantime, Sophie, don't give up. I think there's a lot of hope for Wilma, you, relationships, everything. I think, you know, there's going to be a great big world opens up there.
Oh, what if this was matchmaking? Marion, we'll have to have another show that's a matchmaking show.
Oh, actually, wouldn't that be a lovely idea?
Well, there's still space on the airwaves, Marion. We'll have to discuss it.
Yes, but I think we'll have to master one thing at a time. And it's, you know,
I hope that satisfies you, Sophie. I think we should move on to the next question, which also does have a dog featured in it, actually. Although the problem isn't the dog. So this is from an anonymous writer in an anonymous listener. And we've changed the names so to maintain this person's anonymity. So this person says, I'm currently living with Charlie, who I've been in relationship with 4.5 years. We've gone through major upheavals in this time, living together, setting up a business with a lot of stress and getting a dog. There's that dog. There have been ups and downs, and a while when we decided to break up. At the minute, we're getting on very well and the atmosphere in the flat is amicable and peaceful. However, I feel that Charlie avoids confrontation to an extreme degree. He refuses to discuss any problems and he has the attitude that every day is a clean slate. So we reset and start the day positive. I like this philosophy in principle and I know that I'm too far to the other extreme where I dwell too much on things in the past. But I can't help but feel that he lives in denial about the true state of things and how I feel. The more he avoids talking to me, the more distant I feel from him. This then makes it harder for me to open up and it becomes a bit of a vicious cycle where we both just skirt things. When I do get the courage to speak to him about something difficult, uncomfortable, or awkward, he's usually very sensitive and gets easily offended or thinks I'm picking fights. I then get emotional. Currently, I feel that superficially we have all the great hallmarks of a relationship, but underneath there is very little foundation and basis for closeness. I think about the situation a lot and whether I should make big changes, but I can't seem to find a resolution that I'm happy with. Oof, that's very, very, very difficult, dear listener.
Dear listener and dear writer, yes, it is. And this is anonymous, but actually, it could actually be from lots of people I know. And back in the day, I could have written this myself.
Mm.
So I think it's not an unusual situation, is it?
How did you deal with it then, Marion?
Oh.
Oh.
How did I deal with it?
Or what from how you dealt with it you think this person should take on?
Right, well, I think the the writer has identified really the root of the problem in that they've slipped into a vicious cycle, do you think?
Mm.
And it's really about, can we make any suggestions of how they can break the cycle and maybe get off this merry-go-round of overthinking and non-communication, because it's kind of, that's what the vicious cycle is creating.
Well,
it's
I wonder if, so I remember talking to a friend, an unrelated friend who probably won't listen to this, about their relationship, and they were having weekly couples therapy. And I've got lots of friends who have had couples therapy.
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked to have couples therapy with people I've been with in the past, but they've never agreed with me on that.
Well, as you know, Gilly, our favourite subject is us, so we love any opportunity to talk about us, whether it be in a relationship or anything, you know?
Well, I think therapy is really, really amazing.
Me too.
I think it's so useful. And I understand that there are other ways to do things too. So what my friend said about their therapy was that what it made possible was for like an hour a week, they talk about their problems. And they knew that that was that space to talk about the problems. And the rest of the time they didn't. So it was very clear when to raise an issue and when not. So there are definitely some barriers to therapy. Like, it is costly. It's really costly. I think it's really, really, really valuable if you can carve out that bit of budget. But if you can't, I wonder if there's also a way to say, okay, once a week on a Thursday evening, that's when we do our like relationship work. That's when we look at our stuff. And like, I like this sort of stuff. So like, you know, there's the Gottman Institute. They talk about how to keep relationships healthy, and they have like some self-help things you can do. Or you might find another mechanism, but to have like one time in a week where every week you both commit that time to talking about things, and you hold it in there for that time so that it doesn't sort of seep out or get sort of like, yeah, that thing of like, oh, can we talk about this? But then the other person sort of isn't receptive to that, or they need a bit of sort of mental preparation time. That can be really, really hard.
Do you know, Gilly, I was going to say exactly the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
I think they've slipped into a habit of one being maybe a little bit defensive and the other one feeling that they're not getting enough, they're not getting what they need, or need or want. That's a different thing altogether. What do you want and what do you need? And I was going to suggest, would it be possible for them, they need to get a bit more fun back into their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously this relationship has lots of strengths, and they've built a business together and a home together, and they've got a dog, and it's like, that has to be quite a strong relationship to be able to even achieve that.
Mm.
Because something weaker would have failed a long time. So they've achieved a lot and they've done fantastically well. But if only there was a recipe for a perfect relationship. But there is no such thing as a perfect relationship. I think everybody's got to find their own way and what works for them. But I do know sometimes you can go off the boil a little bit and maybe get hooked on an aspect of your relationship that you think that your partner isn't fulfilling. So in this case, our anonymous writer feels that their emotional needs aren't being met from their partner, and it's starting to become a little bit of, if it's all consuming.
Mm.
Right? The partner is if the writer says, you know, they can be sensitive when they do raise something difficult, uncomfortable or awkward, their partner is. Charlie is sensitive, but gets easily offended. So I wonder if they've just kind of slid off the main track a little bit. And what I was going to say is, maybe the writer could look at find ways of just easing off a little bit, so to take the tension off this emotional balance, so that they can look at their relationship at a little bit less fraughtly and with so many pressures. So try and have some little tactics for diverting yourself. Or do you really need to offload or expose every aspect of your emotional thoughts and everything to your partner? Maybe talk to friends as well, so you can dilute it for a little bit.
I mean, I find that very difficult, not to just, you know.
Me too. The writer, the huge identity I have with this writer is that they're an overthinker. I'm an overthinker, right? I can get consumed by overthinking. Doing this program for me is our little recordings, Gilly. It's really hard because I overthink, and I can overthink so much that I can almost grind myself to a halt. So my challenge doing this is, well, can I learn to manage that feeling in a more balanced way, so I can become a little bit more not so terrified of doing it, or not so worried, or not so anxious? What can I do to start to manage how I feel? So all I can say is, you know, a few things that I do is, sometimes, you know, I said, if I'm getting consumed by anxiety or feelings, how important is it that I express this right now? Is it important? Right? How important is it? It's a very good phrase, because 9 times out of 10, it isn't that important right then in that minute. So maybe if you can use just little things like, how important is it? And maybe put a little section of time together once or twice a week, or whatever works for you. Then it might free you, liberate you. You might find it liberating to step back and start and enjoy your relationship and have a little bit of fun at the end of the day.
I think what might also be important, I don't know, this is so, yeah, exposing of how my mind works, is, you know, if I knew I had, let's take the example of Thursday evenings. If I was to talk to someone about something only on a Thursday evening, I would end up going over my list over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And I think one good thing that might be helpful is just to, like, write down what the problem is. I find writing very helpful to clarify my thoughts. Write it down on a bit of paper.
Or record it.
Or record it, whatever. And then sleep on it at least one night.
Yeah.
You know, so I think then, you know, you'll see everything written down. You won't be worried that you're going to miss something or forget something. And then, I don't know, I find that I can be a bit more objective about my own experience when I'm not sort of fretting on it.
Gilly, do you find that the rule of sleep on it and see how you feel tomorrow is helpful?
Very helpful. I mean, I don't currently have any partner, but I also don't have an avoidant partner. And I do think that the thing of, like, oh, it's a clean slate in the morning, whilst lovely, does sometimes result in a feeling of everything's just being avoided a bit, rather than parked. And I think there's a difference between avoiding something and saying, and going, it doesn't matter, that's done. And actually going, okay, I acknowledge this. I can't deal with it right now, but can we talk about it at this point, or can we come back to it at this point? That's not avoidant. That's positive
and constructive and honest, rather than just a whole emotional storm cloud that blinds you to everything. Maybe Charlie can't express himself the way that the writer expresses themselves, mm-hmm. right? And you know, everybody's different, and being in a relationship, half the adventure is getting to know that person and all of their little foibles, right? Oh,
so many foibles. You think someone's perfect.
Oh, the world's full of foibles, Gilly.
I have no foibles. I think,
so you think.
I think it sounds very positive, just that you felt like you could get your thoughts down and think about this constructively. Yes. That's such a... Oh, I have such admiration for this writer that they can do that. They can sort of see everything. There's just a few little steps to take.
Well, and they also do say that this relationship has great hallmarks of a relationship. That's a lovely, positive statement to say. So they're not saying that they want it to end. They think it's got great hallmarks. They've achieved a lot together. But it's just this it's like a communication problem.
Yeah.
That
can happen forever and always, isn't it? You never get to the end of these things.
But the hugely positive thing is that it's they've written the problem down and they're open to change and to suggestions, which is great. There's loads of stuff online. There's like, I was looking online the other day and there's, I found a book, Women Who Think Too Much, which I actually might treat myself to.
Oh. Right. Well, that would be good for the show, wouldn't it, Marion? That would be good for the show. Hey, I think we should take a little pause now and then we'll come back to the rest of the problems. But do let us know how you're getting on, writer.
And if anybody else has got any suggestions.
Oh, yes.
We get
suggestions, feedback. Congratulations, celebrations, the lot.
Even criticism,
complaints.
Constructive, of course.
Yeah. We can't promise anything at gmail.com. Shall we have a little pause at Marion?
I think we will. I'll put the kettle on.
Okay, good. We're back. We've had our cups of tea.
Yes, well, my cup of tea is still on the go.
I had an apple. Not from me own tree. Disappointing.
Delightful. Fabulous. Great.
Shall we crack on to the next problem?
I think we will, Gilly. Right.
Go on, kick us off.
Right, I'll do the next one. And this is from Anonymous. And I am a single person who lives alone. Just before lockdown, I met a man I really like. And we went on a couple of in-person dates. Then we had to move to Zoom. We got to know each other really well, and I like him a lot. We've met outdoors a bit lately, and we're still really into one another. Score. Here's my problem. As a single person living alone, I can join another household as part of the social bubble thing. As you can imagine, I want to be with him. However, I have a pregnant sister and a gorgeous niece I'm dying to see too. What should I do? Well, there's a dilemma, Gilly.
There's no dilemma. See the boyfriend.
There is a dilemma. See the sister.
The sister, I imagine that the sister has another adult at home.
But you're imagining what suits your outcome. Well,
okay, then. If the sister has another adult at home, go and see the boyfriend. If the sister doesn't have another adult at home, go and see the sister.
Well, I think, but what if the sister is, I don't know how pregnant the sister is, but if the new baby's due quite soon, then she'll be tired and to have a little bit of a diversion and company, and for the niece as well. Would be lovely, And, you know, the baby will come and then she won't be pregnant again. Then she'll have a whole other shed load of jobs to do. But it might really be helpful to her and to the niece. It's really hard being trapped in. I don't know how old the niece is, but it's really hard work being trapped at home, pregnant, with a little one. Don't know how old they are.
I think they are a little one.
And yeah. But you can still meet the new boyfriend outdoors like you've been doing already, and you can still love the anticipation.
I mean, I think 3 months of anticipation is quite enough, don't you? I think, no. I don't know, me personally, I am so in need of, I don't live alone, I live with a great housemate, but like we've hugged once ever when something really sad happened. But other than that, you know, we don't touch each other. And yes, okay, the person who has written in, you know, if they've got a niece, they'll probably touch their niece if they're a young kid, and, you know, play around. So there will be like some touch, some that of that kind of communication. But I think that this person can support their sister and the rest of their family in the ways that they have been now, and go and meet outside. But I think, like, when you're establishing a new romantic relationship, especially when you're just getting to know each other, the element of touch, the element of being like physically close to one another is so crucial. And I do, you know, they've been on a few dates before, so you would think that they might have had some kind of contact, physical contact. But I do wonder, like, for me, that's such an important part of the development of the relationship and such an important part of the communication, that I think you need that sooner rather than later. Otherwise, you can get ahead of yourself on a sort of cognitive level. That's my view.
What you're describing as priorities, your priority would be to invest in the relationship. I think my priority would be to be there for my sister.
Depends, you know, on you always, like your sister.
You can always get another boyfriend. You can't get another sister.
But the sister will always be there. You don't know if the boyfriend will.
Well, then you just, another one would come along. So it's like, loss.
You say another one's going to come along, but it doesn't seem to be happening.
Well, I think you shouldn't attach everything to your own personal experience. Gilliness. So.
Okay, fine.
I would have a chat with my sister and I would ask her how she was feeling about being in lockdown with the little one at home. If she said she was struggling, I would make my sister my first priority. But I wouldn't dismiss the boyfriend. I would just enjoy the anticipation for a little while longer, even though I know it's not easy. Hopefully lockdown will be eased off really, really soon, a bit more, so it won't be a problem for much longer. But I think my first loyalties would lie with my sister.
I don't have a sister. I wonder if it's that. I don't really know what it's like to have a sister.
Well, I hope my sister is listening to this so she can hear what I'm saying. That's my favourite sister, that is, not the other one.
What if the other one listens, Marion?
Well, they won't know which one is which, will they?
Maybe we'll move on from that. Okay, I'm sorry that we haven't achieved a consensus. But I think
we're talking about loyalties, really. My first loyalty would always be to my sister. But that doesn't mean I dismiss having a meeting someone new.
But I do think loyalties can be expressed in different ways. I do agree that, you know, because presumably if you have this really good relationship with your sister, you can talk about things honestly. And you can say, look, I really, really, really want to meet this bloke. I also want to, like, be there for you and your daughter. What do you think?
Look, if I was sitting at home pregnant with a little one, or with a toddler, or a young child at home, and my sister said, I can't Oh, I can't come see because actually I've met somebody. I'd be really, really annoyed with them. And I express that. Just saying, Gilly.
Well,
two different views.
I'm really sorry, dear listener, that we haven't achieved a consensus, but hopefully this conversation will help you make your own decision. And you could always let us know.
Confirm a dilemma, really.
Just talked about the problem, not provided any solution. Oh, well.
Yeah. Well, but if anyone else has got any ideas,
yeah.
So, you know.
And let us know what you do. I'm curious.
Oh, yes, I would love to hear what happens. What's the outcome of this dilemma? And I do acknowledge it is a dilemma. Absolutely. Right. So I think we should just move on. Eh?
Okay, right. I'll go for the next one. This one says, hi, Marion and Gilly. Here are some problems for your show. So this person asks three questions. The last one is about hair. And I think we'll not talk about that one in so much detail, but you can do whatever you want with your hair.
Hair's not an issue for anybody at the minute.
Taking advantage of the fact that we're in lockdown.
Yeah.
I think. Okay, so the other ones are, how would you make friends in a new city if you are A, an adult, B, in lockdown, C, not friendly with strangers on social media, not unfriendly either, D, don't have any hobbies? And two, how do you deal with the voice in your head that says you're not good enough? I think that these are related, questions more related than one might initially think.
Yes.
Don't you?
I think so too. Yeah. Shall we take them one by one, do you think?
Yeah, go on.
And then, so how do you make friends in a new city if you are A, an adult, B, in lockdown? Well, in a new city in lockdown, you can't even see people who've lived here for years can't see the friends. So
it's
not a thing. However, you could make friends maybe with your neighbor, with your new neighborhood.
Yeah. I wonder if, like, you know, if you've moved to a new city in lockdown or around lockdown, I wonder if, well, firstly, you know, you can keep in touch with friends wherever. We're learning that so well.
Correct.
But if it's about, you know, you want someone to go and meet for a walk, in a way, it's quite a good time to make new friends because you're not committing to very much. Do you know what I mean? You could, like, you're not friendly with strangers on social media. Okay, so that's something you can change. Maybe there might be a local Facebook group or something like that. Peer around. Maybe you might not have any hobbies, but you might have some views or interests. And, you know, if you're involved in a particular political thing or particular professional thing, find groups. And I think making friends in a new city, so I have made friends in new cities. So when I moved back to Newcastle, I thought I had loads of friends, but actually probably only had four. And I had to be quite sort of intentional about making new friends. And mine were really like, hello, I like you. Can we go for friends? So I had some awkward, like, friend first dates where I, like, first coffee with someone I hardly know. And some of them are my dearest people now.
Yeah.
And I think you've just got to go for it. I think you've really got to go for it and not be too worried, because you could just, in these conditions, you could be like, hey, I'm new to the neighborhood. I've got no one to sort of meet up with, and I'm sick of the sight of whoever I live with, or if you live alone or whatever. Do you want to meet me for like half an hour in the park just to talk to someone else? And I think people might be quite receptive.
I think people might be quite receptive. Sometimes I just go for a walk around where I live and I smile. I think I find lots of people smile at each other a lot more now. And even if I don't have a chat to anybody, I come back feeling like I've had a little bit of kind of very mild social contact just by like smiling at somebody and saying, oh, it's a nice day. Or, oh, you know, really quite bland things. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. But also, I wonder, I don't know where this person lives, or do they have next door neighbours that they could just chat to if they see them outside? Or, you know, do they have older neighbours who they could knock and say, do you want anything? Or
Oh yeah, mutual aid groups maybe. I mean, that's not necessarily a way to make friends, but it's definitely a way to make connections. And, you know, enacting your generosity is a way to feel good about yourself, which might help with question two, with this sort of low self-esteem thing. But I do think the self-esteem thing is part of it, because there might be something in you that's going, you're not good enough to make new friends. And actually you just...
Yes, you look at other people and say, I wish I could be more like them, but I just can't, right? I wish someone had said to me years ago, you've got to stop again. You see how lots of problems link up? It's a little bit... I think low self-esteem is linked to overthinking as well. Because some people just seem to just get out there and just do it. I don't really, I think, and then sometimes don't do it because I've kind of
talked myself out of it.
Yeah.
I think I do think probably everyone at some point in their life has the like, oh, I'm not good enough bit.
Oh, absolutely. And I wish someone had said to me years ago, do you know, you're just as good as anybody else. And one day when you're older, only marginally older, I hasten to say, you're going to look at photos of yourself and say, I don't know why I was so hard on myself. It's actually, I was really quite pretty. I don't look the way I thought I looked. I felt like I didn't fit in or anything. Actually, I'm looking at photos and it's absolutely I did. So it kind of comes with, I think it's like an age thing it's as well. I think nature doesn't give you everything in one go. The older I find I get, the less I really care. So
that was my thought of like, well, good enough at what? And why do you need to be good to do something? Like, I am finding it very liberating to do things that I'm not good at. Like, oh, it doesn't matter.
Like this?
Well, yes, this is one example.
Well, I'm not saying you're not very good, but I am.
I mean, I'm not very good. I'm supposed to be reining us in on the time.
Yeah, but if you don't have a bash at doing something that you think you're not going to be very good at, how do you ever grow and find out what you can do?
But there's also huge pleasure in not being very good. Like, I wonder if, like, you could take it as an experiment and go, okay, well, I'm not very good at making new friends, but I'm going to try to rubbishly make new friends and just see what happens.
Yeah.
I don't think it could do very much harm.
I don't think it can do any harm, right? To just be receptive to any social opportunities that come your way.
And to create them.
And create them. In the meantime, I don't know if this person has like neighbours or, you know, if they chat over the garden fence or just smile at people around you. And
I do think making friends takes effort. It's not just a receptive pastime. People are not going to march up to you and say, will you be my friend?
Yeah.
You have to do that. If you want more friends, you need to do that. It's quite an effort. But I do think it's actually rewarding.
It's also quite a scary thing to do, Gilly.
Absolutely.
Right. So I had this friend, a very good friend, and a long time ago she said to me, you know, whenever I'm terrified of doing anything, I just flick that switch off in my head and just do it. And it sounds like stupid advice, but it's good advice.
You've got to find that switch.
Yes, you do. You've got to look for that switch. And do it right. It's not alcohol isn't the switch. Also, I don't know if they've got transport or if they've got their own transport, because then they could maybe go out on little exploring days out, or you know, pack a little picnic and take yourself off somewhere and learn a little bit about your wider new area that you've moved to.
You could even do that by foot if you wanted, depending on where you live.
Yes, you could, or public transport.
Yeah, carefully.
Carefully, yeah.
Right, I hope that provides some solutions for this person. Let us know how you get on.
I'll say
the email address again, wecan'tpromiseanything@gmail.com. Oh, we're definitely scoping for more problems. Definitely more problems. So please, if you're listening, even if you've got quite a minor problem or a very major problem, do send it in. I've got a spreadsheet. I keep track of them very carefully.
Yes, you do. You're very efficient, like that, Gilly. Very good.
Yeah, I'm an amateur broadcaster, but I'm not new at spreadsheets.
No, if that's quite obvious. Right, shall we move on, Gilly?
Yes, this is our last one of the day.
Right, and this is a very, very long problem. And it's we're going to call this sender Gareth, who identifies as male, right? And they're
which they made very clear, yes, by saying at the end, thank you, I'm saying, Gareth, I'm saying, male in brackets.
Yes, yes, and that is relevant to the problem. Mm-hmm. So the problem begins, dear Marge, which we are hugely flattered to even be mentioned in the same sentence as the queen of problems.
Marjorie Brooks.
Correct. Can you advise me on a problem that is troubling me at the moment? The problem has arisen because I am mildly addicted to Woman's Hour. This is a program on Radio 4, which probably tells you more than you would want to know about me. My problem is like a two-tined fork, with each tine joined at the root. For details of fork component structure, visit www.quora.com/ what are the parts of a fork called? And
you for that?
Yeah. Yes. The root of the fork is an uncontrollable urge to get at Woman's Hour presenter Jenny Murray's nose. I have sent in numerous comments, complaints, and light-hearted insults, which I refer to as teasing, about her everyday sexism against men. Unfortunately, for all my efforts, I've only ever obtained one apology from her for an inappropriate joke during an item on sex robots. A male prerogative, apparently. I don't believe that for a starter. Well, after the item, a listener emailed in to suggest that someone should combine sex robots with killer robots and neatly deal with two problems in one fell swoop. How Jenny chortled as she read that out. To bring this email to a concise end or conclusion.
Concise!
Yes, I'm taking that with a little pinch of... the points of my fork tines, aka questions, are time one. Should I be ashamed of myself for thinking Jenny is a career feminist monkey? Time two, how can I refine my comments to penetrate her armor? Time 2A, should have been time three, but that would mean rewriting the earlier part of this email. How can I get a life? Must I give up my addiction? I do so love annoying her. Thank you, Gareth Mail.
Okay, I have some things to say about this. Okay.
Yes.
So, firstly, there is no such thing as sexism against men. That's not a thing. That's not a thing, because the ism in that, the discrimination in that is necessarily it has to suggest a power imbalance, and that it goes in one particular way. So there is no sexism against men, because men as a gender benefit more from our patriarchal systems than women. So I just disagree with that as a concept. However, I do
think... And you are free to disagree with that, but have you ever listened to Woman's Hour?
Oh, Women's Hour is awful. It's awful. Yeah. I think it's a disgrace to sexism, actually, because it talks about such... to feminism, I mean. Oh, it's a disgrace to feminism, because it talks about such rubbish. It's like, it's essentially like Loose Women, which for me is just like, you know, a rubbish tabloid newspaper read out loud by women. It's Loose Women with a posh voice on, Women's Hour. It annoys me so much. My friend, Jamila Johnson-Small, once did a very short-lived but very excellent sort of little podcast called Bitches Minute. And I thought that was great. Instead of Women's Hour, Bitches Minute. So Women's Hour is awful. It is awful.
Yes,
and I can understand why you would want to get up Jenny Murray's nose. I do know that. I can feel that. I'm with you. But I just think, get over it.
But Gareth is speaking as a male, and obviously has been deeply hurt and offended, I think, by the whole Woman's Hour concept, right? So I think we should answer his questions. And the first one, should he be ashamed of himself for thinking Jenny is a career feminist monkey?
No. Shame isn't going to do, Gareth.
I think Jenny would say, Gareth, what on earth are you talking about? I'm not a monkey at all. I am the epitome of career feminism. So I think you're barking up the wrong tree there, Gareth, right? It's a road to nowhere.
But there's no need to feel shame for it. That's your view.
Oh, no, Dad, I think you should wear that badge with pride. Question two, how can I refine my comments to penetrate her armour? Well, you can't, because her armour is not penetrable. She's had it for decades and decades and decades, and it's completely impervious, and it's never going to happen, so you're wasting your time. Don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I also think, like, I don't know. I mean, I think I can understand. I think we need to go deeper into the psychology of this, because you seem really, really, really furious about Jenny Murray and Women's Hour, which is fine. And, you know, I like to feel indignant rage quite a lot of the time. I think I occupy that state of being.
But Gilly, it's so patronizing. Do you know about they hardly ever have any men on it.
I don't want there to be men on it. That's not the point for me. It is that they talk about things that are like women's issues in a way that, you know, I want to talk about, you know, systemic structural misogyny. I don't want to talk about a new razor. I don't want to talk about like women-y things in that way. I think that's rubbish.
Well, 1950s, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's also like, it's tosh. It's like a women's magazine read out, and I don't buy those because I think they're absolute rubbish. They're just ways for women to be occupied with things in order that we can't see the patriarchy which is ruining our lives.
Gilly, you and Gareth have got a lot in common.
Ugh! How dare you?
You really, really do. Shall we move on to point three?
Time three.
How can I get a life? Must I give up my addiction?
I think instead of listening to Women's Hour, when it comes to 10 o'clock every morning, you think, oh, I must listen to something. You could jump on the Star and Shadow Radio Listen Again show reel and just listen to something else.
Us? You could just keep listening to us all the time.
Oh, this is our third episode. It'll last from Monday to Wednesday.
Just put them on a loop.
There are other great shows on Star and Shadow Radio that people could listen to.
Oh, I know.
You could listen because it's every day for an hour. Instead, you could save up your Read Me the Riot Act by Harriet Lewis and just listen to that at 10 o'clock if you really must.
Yes.
Then you don't need to get a badge. Or use your indignation, your fire, your fuel to actually commit to some change in this world, Gareth. You're wasting it. Do something useful, Gareth.
Oh, Gareth, if that's too big an ask, why don't you set up...
Of course it's too big an ask for Gareth.
Why doesn't Gareth set up a Woman's Hour Anonymous group? Then he could kind of overcome his addiction and meet like-minded people, and they could all support each other.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, that might just result in a kind of anti-women incel type group. I'm not sure I would encourage that.
Or that might end up as just a group to indulge the whole indulgent woman's hour.
I think this is another one that needs distraction and diversion rather than fuel, Gareth.
Yes. Get busy, Gareth, doing something
useful. There's so many problems in the world. You don't need to worry about Jenny Murray. Do your own show. Do your own show on Star and Shadow Radio.
Actually, why doesn't Gareth do an antidote?
As long as it's not poisonous and misogynist.
Oh, yeah, a kind antidote show. Do you think?
Gareth, let us know what you think. If you start a show, we'll be the first listeners.
We will indeed. Absolutely. We'd love to do that. Nice.
I think that's a good way to end. Gareth, do your own damn show.
Yeah.
Totally. Marion, we've gone through so much.
Yes, we have.
Five big problems. We need some more problems for next time. So please do write in to wecan'tpromiseanything@gmail.com.
Please send us your problems. Because it's like, we love it. We love to get them. And we really do enjoy talking about them. And I think the people that helps most of all is kind of us, really.
Definitely. Yeah. I feel excited and energised after getting all ranty about Gareth. This is great. I'm going to go into my Sunday.
Do you feel like you've got your adrenaline levels up to go out there and kind of, you know,
change
do loads?
Yeah.
Marvellous. Well, really do it.
Let's rein it in. That's enough for now. Goodbye. See you in a fortnight.
Oh, bye-bye.
Star and Shadow Radio. Keep it locked.
That's the end. What a relief. What a relief. It's nice to sort of have a look at the chat every now and again. Michelle saying, don't think we need any more anti-feminist shows. Marion and I believe that Gareth's problem might have been a joke. Not that that's not worth talking about, and we did take it seriously. But I don't think we need to be too worried. But if you do have any problems, do send them in. I am running out, the spreadsheet's getting quite thin. Thanks very much. Glad that's over again. See you in a fortnight.